This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. Olive oil. It's amazing that the olives and the oil are produced right here on the Central Coast. And let's jump right in and find out how it's been going on for quite some time.
Clotilde Julien, and I'm a co-owner of Mill on Wheels, mobile olive processing plant.
How did olives get to California?
The Franciscan fathers came into South America, and after that they want to colonize the Indians, and they were coming up the coast. First trees that they planted were in San Diego, and then they came up the coast, and as they were making the missions, they were planting olive trees, and that's how the olive trees came into California. They used it to preserve their food. Olive oil is one of the best natural preservatives for food. Anything you keep soaking in olive oil, as long as it's not in contact with air, it's perfectly fine as a preservative. They could preserve meat, the vegetables, everything, and then they just had to cook it, and it was cooked with olive oil, so can't get any better than that. They knew what was good. They made wine, they had olive oil, and they just knew
how to...
Yes, and made bread, so they had it all. After that, a lot of people realized that they were making good wind barriers for their crops. So if you go out in the valley, or even up in Napa, they planted a lot of them along their crops, like the grapes and everything, because it blocks the wind. And so initially they were doing it as windbreakers, and then they realized that you could use the olives for something. They started making the olives in Lindsay, and that's became capital of the table olives. You know, the black olives the kids put on their fingers, that's the Lindsay olives. And so they made a business out of it, which was very smart. Now a lot of it goes into oil.
If you go to the La Purisima Mission in Lompoc, you can see an olive oil press from the mission era. There is a photo on the Playing with Food podcast page. My adventure with olive oil started in the spring when the olive trees were just beginning to bud in San Miguel in northern San Luis Obispo County.
Tom Baer, farmer, Solana Farms. These trees are approximately 10-year-old Arbequina varietal. They have been developed into a hedge or a row so that they could be mechanically harvested.
When you plant an olive tree, how long does it take until it produces?
It's going to start producing within the first couple of years. It sometimes is beneficial to actually remove the fruit during the younger years, not to put too much stress on it, and to let it grow into a little bit stronger tree so that it can carry the weight of the fruit. I'd say typically it would be 5 years.
Quite an investment, 5 years to get your first crop that you can make oil into. What can you do with the olives in those first 4 years?
You could always brine the olives. It's still, again, the argument of having that weight hanging on the tree and creating a stress level. You might still be fine removing the olives or even before they become a developed olive to actually take it off.
So we're here in early spring. There's these little tiny, tiny, like 1 millimeter little bunches of balls on there. What are those?
That actually is the soon-to-be flower and soon-to-be an olive. And what's going to happen is in the next couple of weeks, the little blossoms are going to form. And in the rows, approximately every 10 to 15 trees, there's a pollinator in here. So when the winds come, it'll carry and pollinate all of the fruit inside this one little block of olives that we have. They are self-pollinating. We don't need bees to actually produce a crop. People do sometimes bring bees in. The three tree varietals that are most common now would be Arbequina, Korniki, which is a Greek varietal, Arbisona. The mix of those three make for good pollinators. If you have Arbequina as a general varietal, then you would use either a Korniki or an Arbisona as a pollinator. And vice versa, out in the other where you have a Korniki block, it'd be Arbisona or Arbequina as a pollinator.
So you need a different varietal to pollinate?
We just do it because it's proven to work. We water quite heavily because of the soil and the salt. I believe in smaller rounds of watering, but many, rather than long watering blocks and fewer. It just seems to keep the tree and the canopy much happier. In managing the vineyard, along with just setting watering times and nutrition times, we are sort of heading into the future with the use of drones and light waves and looking at the actual conditions of the plants, their health, their water needs, their vigor. If it's having a health issue, you can literally walk right to it because it can give you the GPS location and saves a lot of time with the maintenance of it. This is something that is new for farming. Last year, I used a similar program through through a provider of fertilizers. They also had a satellite program where they took images of the vineyard and then shared with me the filtered imagery to tell me if I was having watering issues, health issues, and basically just worked in a spectrum of color to work your way through it. You know, in the next 10 years, it's going to really become the most important issue of farming in general. They do it for row crops, potatoes, everything.
Later in May, when the trees were budding along nicely, growers gathered at the celebration of the Olive Oil Awards that kicked off the Paso Robles Olive Oil Festival. They took some time to discuss olive growing.
Karen Talent, The Groves on 41.
Shahana Rahman, Boca Bella Farms.
Scott Lindberg, Mountain Springs Olive Ranch.
Marcy Lindberg, Mountain Springs Olive Ranch.
Jennifer Talent, The Groves on 41.
Karen Roach, Olea Farm.
Rick Roach, Olea Farms.
How many varieties are growing on the Central Coast?
Hundreds of varieties.
A lot of varieties. We just grow Arbequina.
It's the most planted in California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
The Arbequina is actually one of the hardiest.
The hardiness is, especially in this area with the drought, it's drought tolerant, which means it can survive on little water, although that affects your production. And also you can plant them high density so you can machine harvest if that's what you want to do.
What are some of the challenges of getting started in olive growing and olive oil business?
How long a program?
Right. That's a full-size program. When we bought our farm, prior owners told us we had no experience farming, and they said, oh, it's so easy. You water the trees, you harvest, you press them, you make oil. It's the easiest thing. Turns out that none of those things are true, that farming is actually very hard. So one example is the first year we had this great crop, we thought. We had all these blooms on the trees. We're going to have lots of fruit. And then we had 5 minutes of hail. And that was the end of that. So weather, Mother Nature can be very fickle. So I think that has been one of the hardest things, that and the drought.
Where are you located?
San Miguel. We had 5 minutes of hail. We thought, this is so cool. Look at the hail. You know, it's like 2 minutes and then we're going, oh my God, it's knocking all the blooms off the trees. So it's one example of how take all this time to you're nurturing your trees, you're watering, you're fertilizing, you're watching them grow. And then just in just a few minutes, it could totally change the landscape of what your projection is.
So we're all pretty close to a full bloom here now in our trees. And so as long as there's no winds and no rain and no hail.
And no hail.
Yes, and no freeze. Yes, we're going to do great.
We need rain.
Well, but not right now.
A little bit of light rain.
Fickle Mother Nature is only one of the challenges for growers, and among the other challengers is the fickle consumer.
What are the joys and challenges of marketing and selling your final product?
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. We're competing with $4 imposter product in the grocery store. Yeah, trying to sell for $20.
What we're doing, like with the Olive Festival, we're educating the public.
Right.
And in California especially, I think people are conditioned to think that Italian olive oil is the best olive oil or Greek olive oil, and not understanding how there are different types of oil and the import process and the certification process is not the same. California has been really good to us, I think, especially with a very stringent certification process, so that when we're certified as extra virgin, it means there's a process and standards that go with that. I think we're all, especially in the Olive Growers Association, committed to try to go out there and educate the public about what it means to have certified California extra virgin olive oil.
Then it was harvest time in November up at Olea Farms in Templeton, run by Karen and Rick Roach.
Here with Karen in the Grove, and it's harvest time.
It's harvest time, best time of the year. This orchard here at Olea is 1,200 Arbequina trees, all one variety. When we pick these trees, we like to get a mixture of green, a little bit of blush. And when I say blush, we'll look at some of the olives. You'll see that they're starting to turn a little bit of purple on the bottom. And then we have some really nice purple ones. So I like to get a combination of that. Usually a third, and a third is ideal for us. So the ripeness is a big factor in the flavor profile. Arbequina is always green and grassy with a little peppery finish on the back. And you can play with that a little bit by leaving the fruit on the tree longer or taking it off when it's not ripe. The sooner the fruit comes off the tree, the more robust and peppery and green grassy flavor you'll have, and the longer the fruit stays on, the more it mellows it out. So it'll just be a little bit more of a mild, green, grassy, herbaceous front with still a slight pepperiness. So that's how we can play a little bit. Arbequina has its flavor profile. You can't change that. It is a varietal, but you can play a little bit with the spectrum of the notes.
How long does it take to harvest 1,200 trees?
1,200 trees takes us about a day and a half of a crew of 50.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you get out there yourself?
I do. I was actually out here with the rake for about an hour, and then it made me even appreciate more what these crews do. I was done. It was like, okay, back to the computer I go. It's strenuous. It's a lot of work, raking and hand harvesting. You know, a lot of the fields now are being put in all mechanical harvest now. So there's a huge cost factor and also labor force. Right now, the crews are in and they're raking the trees. This orchard here is all hand harvest. So how they're doing it is they lay down tarps in order to catch any of the fruit that would be falling off the trees. Once they get the tarps laid down, they grab their rakes and they grab each branch and they just rake down. Sometimes they'll use gloves and hands to strip them. As you can see, the gentleman is raking off any of the leaves and the branches. And then they take it and they put it in the bin, and the bin goes directly to the mill. So yes, you'll see that there are some left. The first year that we had the ranch, I just had to come out here and pick them all. Second year, not so much, and today's the third year, and it's like, yeah, it hurts me. It sounds funny to see fruit left on the trees, you know, but they can't get it all. Even mechanical harvesters.
I mean, they're small. They're not.
They're small, but yeah. These trees were loaded this year. So if you see some of the trees that are loaded, you'll see that they have gotten 95% of it.
Husband Rick described another way of harvesting.
Typically, the larger producers, what they do is they mechanically harvest. There's several different harvesters that they can use. One is very much like the grapes harvesters that you see. They drive right over the top of the trees. They shake the fruit off the tree. They also use almond shakers, cherry shakers. If you're a big producer, that's the way you want to do it. Typically, $600 an acre to mechanically harvest compared to $3,000 to $3,500 to have it hand harvested. Big difference.
Then it was time to turn the olives into oil.
We're here in a parking lot in Templeton with this big truck and a lot of noise and people just hanging around with buckets of olives. So what's going on?
Today is small load day for milling for all the small farmers here in this area. Mill on Wheels is doing the milling. So it's the world's largest mobile mill that's producing the olive oil for these smaller growers and farmers here in this area. It's a great service. They're able to come down here and get their olives produced into olive oil today at a very reasonable price. And this is a huge turnout this year for olives. Last year, because of the weather that we had, the trees weren't sure what to do, so they didn't produce any oil, if at all, in this area. This year, the trees are loaded. It's a really good crop to be had. So it's a really good year for California extra virgin olive oil. And that's what the mobile mill here produces, nothing but extra virgin olive oil. It's the first cold press that produces the extra virgin.
I see people literally with 5-gallon buckets of olives. Do you press just their olives, each person's olives, one at a time?
For the people that show up with the smaller buckets, what they'll do is they'll put them together with two or three people so that they have enough fruit to produce a batch of olive oil. And then what they'll do, they split it to whatever's produced. What they're asking for here at small load day is typically anything under a ton. Two of the olive bins is a ton of fruit.
Are you doing it by varietal?
I think what they're trying to do is put the varietals together with the customers so that if it's all Arbequina, they can get all Arbequina together. Some people have a mix of fruit. Each fruit has a different flavor profile, and depending on how they put them together, the master miller determines the flavor profile of that oil being produced.
Where does all that go?
They put the fruit into the mill, then it goes through a wash station. The fruit all gets cleaned. Then from there, it goes to the crusher. It crushes the skin, the pit, the seed. At that point, it goes into the malaxer, which turns it into a mash. And there's paddles in there that works it. And what that does is it separates the oil from the paste and the mash. The pit itself actually helps to extract some of the micro oils that are caught in the skin. And then from there, it goes into the decanter. It spins the paste and gets as much of the oil out of it as it can. At that point, the paste is pumped off the mill, and then it goes through a centrifuge, which does a final cleaning and takes the moisture out of the oil and takes all the fine sediments out of it at that point. and pretty much that's the process. As far as the paste that gets produced from the byproduct of the olive oil, it can be used to feed cattle, to compost. You can till it back into the orchard, so nothing goes to waste.
Okay, and I noticed that it's kind of murky green when it comes out, but when you buy olive oil in the store, it's kind of this pale golden yellow.
As soon as they produce the oils, it's rich, it's green, it's grassy, it is a darker color, but as time progresses, it will turn a different color, that golden, that green, a lighter color, absolutely.
Rick took me on a tour of the mobile mill during the actual operation, which is very, very loud.
But it's really, really a cool operation. And this is the world's largest mobile mill. There's only two of these produced. This is a 36-foot custom trailer with a 75 kW generator, which runs the whole mill. Every farm has water, has a well, and typically that's all they need to produce olive oil. It lives here in Paso Robles, but it will be at Olea next week. Comes out on a conveyor belt. This is a vacuum that picks up any sticks, leaves, anything else that's in it. At that point, it goes into a cold water bubbler. This is cold water. It just bubbles, cleans the fruit. It goes out onto here, drops out to the screw that goes to the crusher. The oil coming out, this is a shaker fan. It gets pumped from here to the centrifuge in the back for the final cleaning. This right here is a big drum. That paste gets pushed through this. It's spinning. The paste goes off the mill through that pump. The oil drops out here. So really, really a cool operation. So this mill does 2 tons an hour, and literally from the time they put the fruit in to the time the farmer can be tasting his own olive oil. It gets produced right on site. This mill goes directly to the orchards and produces the oil as soon as it comes out of the field.
Voila, and that's how olive oil is made. Time to taste. Back at Solana with Tim.
So this is your olive oil storage.
Right. This is co-pressed Arbequina olive oil with our estate navel oranges. So the oranges are ground up in the mill with the olives at the same time. So that's the only way that you can really put that molecular flavor into it. And there's no heating, there's no nothing. This is all cold. Give it a taste.
You can definitely smell the citrus, definitely.
Give it a taste. Tell me what you think.
Oh, that's really nice.
All I'm thinking is like a nice duck.
Mm, that's really nice.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, amazing. So what different flavors do you have here?
We have orange and lemon. I don't have the lemon actually here on the property. And then Korniki, Arbequina, and also a Tuscan blend. That is our own little private Tuscan blend.
That's the tasting. Then there's more.
More and more people are finding out about olive oil and the quality of the olive oil being produced here in California. And they like to come to the farm and they like to see how their olive oil is being produced. And we try and do that. We give tours here and we tell them about it and we show them the mobile mill that we have here and how olive oil is made and processed.
And Rick and Karen offer more than just tours.
This year, Olea Farm did something different, and we gave a 4-hour workshop. We talked about the history of the olives in California, how we plant the orchards, how we maintain the orchards, prune. And then we all grabbed buckets and we headed out here. Everybody picked a bucket and we took it back to the mill and we dumped it in and pressed the oil, and they left with a bottle of the oil that their hands picked, their labor of love for the day. That was received really well, and we have a lot of request to do that again next year, so we probably will. And it's great because it really brings awareness to the consumer about what it takes to produce that. You know, you walk down the aisle, you see a bottle of olive oil, you grab it, and you don't think twice about how many hands went into that. And we had a fun day. A lot of the participants said that they really didn't realize, you know, how much goes into it. We worked out here for about an hour, picking hour and a half, and everyone was pretty tuckered out. So then we went back and we had some drinks and we waited for the mill to press the oil. They were really happy with what they left because Olea Nuevo is pretty special.
It's true that most of the world's olive oil is produced in Spain and then Italy, Greece, Tunisia, and Syria to round out the top five. California production is tiny in comparison, but its quality isn't lacking. At the world's most prestigious competition, the 2019 New York International Olive Oil Competition, American olive oil producers brought home 28 gold and 27 silver awards. At least 12 of those awards went to Central Coast olive oil producers. Olive oil on the Central Coast will just continue to grow, and it will get better and better. It shows in the attitude of the growers at the Olive Oil Festival, expressed in this heartfelt summary by Karen.
We're blessed to be able to do this. It is definitely a labor of love. There's a lot of sacrifice. You know, there's a lot of sacrifice in agriculture, from the farmer to the workers. They work so hard. And it doesn't matter if it's a holiday. It doesn't matter if it's their child's fifth birthday party. They have a sacrifice. We have a sacrifice. The miller has a sacrifice, because when the fruit's ready, it's time. You know, whether they have something, all the way down to the chefs. For the chefs to use local olive oil, it obviously costs us more to produce than the big box people, the corporations. So it is a sacrifice for the chefs even to carry the local olive oil, because they have to make cuts somewhere else in order to do that. It's a beautiful thing, but it's a sacrifice for everybody to bring quality fruit and vegetables to the table.
Americans consume just under 1 liter per person per year, compared to the 12 liters for the average Greek. But consumption is on the rise, as is California olive oil production. So if you haven't tasted it yet, go out and get some. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.